This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's Bat Week this week, an international annual celebration created to raise awareness about the need for bat conservation. And in line with that, we're going to pay tribute to these tiny ecosystem services providers who, although hardly seen, are hard at work all around the world each night, busy working on so many things from pest control right up to plant pollination. And joining me to share why bats are so awesome are some of the lovely folks from the research group RIMBA, and specifically from Project Europas, Dr. Shima Abdul Aziz, who's the principal investigator. She's also the co-founder and president of RIMBA. Also joining me is Hana Abdul Aziz, the communications manager for Project Europas, and Mary Ruth Lau, who is the senior conservation scientist with the project. Welcome, ladies. How are you today?
Good.
Thank you, Juliet,
Thanks for having us. Absolute pleasure. Bat Week. I love this week so much. Thank you so much for joining me. We're just going to geek out over bats. I know how nerdy that sounds, but let's remind our listeners, you know, why we need bats in our lives. You know, why are they important for the environment? What sorts of vital ecological functions do they perform for us?
Right, so bats are the only flying mammals in the world, and they comprise almost a fifth of all mammal species. So that's pretty cool in their own right. In general, bats can be categorized into insectivorous bats, so bats that eat insects, and fruit bats. And fruit bats feed on plant parts such as fruits and flowers, and they also play a dual role where they function as pollinators and also seed dispersers. So because they play this dual role, bats are really crucial for maintaining the health of rainforests, mangroves, peat swamps, and our fruit orchards.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and we know all of this, Mary Ruth and Shima. You know, we've spoken about this many times, but it's always good to remind our listeners, you know, as human settlements get bigger, we are, of course, the ones encroaching further into the areas where they live, right? And bat populations around the world are declining as a consequence of our activities and our human activities, right? You know, maybe you can help spell out what a world without bats would actually mean for us.
Sure. I think a world without bats would be a terrible place to live in. The ecosystems, which I mentioned earlier, so rainforests, mangroves, peat swamps, fruit orchards, fruit which bear the fruit that we all love to eat, these would suffer. And so, you know, apart from the benefits that fruit bats bring, insectivorous bats also help with pest control, and they are valued at an estimated almost $4 billion each year. Wow. So, the world wouldn't be a great one to live in. And I think it's also sad that many people are not aware of how important bats are, like you mentioned in the intro, simply because they are nocturnal, meaning they are active at night, and they're just not seen or encountered. And apart from, you know, being invisible almost, they also face habitat destruction from deforestation, limestone quarrying, and then they're also threatened by hunting, either for food, for sport, and also because they are considered agricultural pests.
Okay. And, you know, negative depictions of bats in popular culture, especially now, right, with Halloween rolling up, they don't quite make them, you know, the conservation poster child, I mean, I suppose material, you know, as conservation poster child, right? But of course, you guys at RIMBA, specifically Project Europas, you've been working really hard towards changing those sorts of narratives for bats, right? Can you remind our listeners how you guys go about doing that?
You're right. On top of the multiple threats that I mentioned earlier, these negative perceptions, which often come up around Halloween, which is why that week is happening now.
Right.
These have really done them an injustice. And so at Project Europas, we hope that being a project that focuses solely on fruit bat conservation in Malaysia, that we can change and reclaim this narrative from what's depicted in mainstream. So typically, you would see that insectivorous bats get a lot more press in the West. And that's also because that's where a lot of the bigger conservation organizations are based. Mm-hmm. And there are no fruit bats in North America. But Malaysia is home to one of the largest species of fruit bats, the flying foxes. And they are also the most threatened bats in Malaysia. So we definitely felt that there was a need to shine the spotlight on flying foxes and other fruit bats that, you know, play this special role. And we are in the right place to really showcase them. So as part of our work, we conduct research to collect scientific evidence, and we share our results with policymakers, fruit farmers, and also residents who share the same living space with bats. We've also collaborated with bat biologists and artists from the Asia-Pacific region to look at how bats are celebrated in cultures around the region, and also, again, as an attempt to reclaim this narrative from the mainstream negative Halloween-y depiction of bats. So I think Siren and I talked about this on the podcast back in April.
That's right.
And we also felt it was important to have a more accessible version of our findings beyond the publication. So we recently commissioned Rohan Chakravarti of Green Humor. He's a cartoonist, and he illustrated a beautiful map about the incredible bat tales of the region on top of the other map that we had drawn by Remina Yi last year.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, like Mary-Wu said, we really wanted to focus on fruit bats for Project Tropus. First of all, because we feel that we're in this very unique position here in Malaysia where we have these bats that actually are visiting plants and feeding on fruits and flowers. And that's something that you don't get in a lot of other countries. Like Mary-Wu said, in North America and Europe, they don't have fruit bats. So when they talk about bats, they only talk about the insect-eating bats. So you get a lot of information out there that's about the echolocating bats that hunt insects. You don't get as much content or as many messages talking about fruit bats visiting plants, especially the specific type of fruit bats that we have here in Malaysia, our own native fruit bats. So we really wanted to start an initiative to really highlight these kinds of bats that we actually have here right at home, especially because, as Mary-Wu mentioned, the largest of bats in the world can be found here in Malaysia, the flying foxes, the Tropus bats. And they're also among the most threatened bats in the world because they get hunted so intensively. And so we felt that we really wanted to do something about that. We really wanted to address that situation. And also we wanted to find a way to highlight how bats are special in our local cultures as well in this part of the world, which again, you don't hear about this so much internationally because you hear more about bats from other countries, other parts of the world. You don't hear bat stories from our part of the world so commonly. And so we wanted to find a way to change that and to really highlight what we have here in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm. And you've been doing a wonderful job. I mean, you found so many creative ways. I mean, what, you know, Mary Ruth and Siren spoke about, that project was huge, you know, and it the posters, you know, all the different material that you came up with, you know, trying to reach out to so many different segments of society, you know, with very simplified sort of information, but really fascinating information. I don't know, that to me was wonderful work. And yeah, you know, kudos for that as well. But of course,
thank you so much.
My pleasure. And of course, you know, in line with Bat Week, you guys are also still continuing to focus on public outreach programs that tackle the impacts of the loss of traditional ecological knowledge, right? And the repercussions of that. What's that about? Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Right. So regarding traditional ecological knowledge, we found this specifically to be the case with flying foxes. In Malay, there's a specific name for the flying fox called the geluang, which is differentiated from gelawar, which is the name for bats in general. And the fact that also geluang has been a motif in long-held traditions in multiple Malaysian cultures reflects how interwoven these animals are as part of our cultural psyche. So from research and interviews we did with people around Peninsula Malaysia, we found that this knowledge that's passed down from generation to generation is on the decline due to a number of reasons, possibly urbanization, growing Western influence through the media, and also that people are no longer interacting or depending with nature on a daily basis like they used to. And of course, in some cases, also flying fox populations are no longer present in a particular region, or they have, you know, retreated deeper into the forest. Mm. So one example I can think of is in Batu Kurau in Perak. There's a durian farming community there, and they used to have a flying fox colony that lived on top of the limestone hill, which was then either hunted or the flying fox flew away in the 80s. And the farmers claim that the urine quality also deteriorated when the flying foxes disappeared.
Right.
We also heard how a farmer in Trengganu said that in his younger days, he heard a myth that if you see flying foxes appear during the flowering season, the durian flowering season, then there is that connection that the harvest will be good. Mm-hmm. And we've heard this story in multiple forms from various communities in different cultures in different states. But at the same time, there are also communities that, you know, we would hypothesize or we would think that they would have stories about flying foxes, but when we asked them, they did not. So it kind of varies and there's no consistent pattern throughout. But also among the Chinese communities, we found that there is also a confusion, maybe which could be perceived as loss, where flying foxes are mixed up with other species. So when we asked, have you seen flying foxes, they then, through the course of the interview, we realized that they're actually referring to civets, not flying foxes, or, you know, another species of mammal, like the slow loris in Penang. So there's that, and basically communities are no longer aware whether due to the decline of flying fox populations or just not being out at night or not seeing them, that this species is no longer part of that cultural memory that's passed down. I'll end with just one example. An Iban children's rhyme in Sarawak. We learned of this. It was sung to children at their bedtime around dusk, which also coincided with the emergence of flying foxes. But because they no longer see flying foxes emerge, the rhyme is no longer sung to children, and presumably because children do not go to bed at dusk anymore. that's a loss that you can see because the rhyme may have, you know, lost its relevance, or the adults have forgotten about it because they no longer see the flying foxes.
Okay, that's really
good. And I think, just to add on to that, what we really found through our work, just looking into this aspect, is something that's very sad. It's the fact that generations nowadays are not experiencing this kind of natural phenomena anymore, but at the same time, the traditional knowledge and the traditional practices are not being passed down. So we know there was traditional knowledge out there, because when we talk to some of these communities, some of the older people still know, but then when we talk to other people, they don't have that knowledge anymore, or that awareness, it's just been lost. And so I think for us, it's also very sad, and also a very important aspect to explore on a very personal level, because we're all Malaysians. So this is actually it's our collective heritage as Malaysians. And even like for us in Project Tropus, within our generation, we've lost this kind of traditional ecological knowledge. And so we felt it was very important for us to try and reclaim that, to bring that back for ourselves also, you know, so we don't lose this, but also to pass it on to the next generation so that they don't lose this, so that it stays with them.
Mm-hmm. And that is so important, isn't it? Like you said, I mean, half the things that you've told me, I have no clue about. So that's unfortunately, right? No knowledge whatsoever. Yeah. So thank goodness, you know, for the work that you're doing. And it's not something that we learned in school, was it? Not even though it's, you know, so something that is so locally ours, so, you know, traditionally and culturally ours, and yet we have no knowledge, and maybe they're just not seen as a species to be, they're not the poster child for conservation, unfortunately, right? Unlike the tiger, for example, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But never mind, this is what you guys are working on. And of course, you know, you are trying to reach out to the younger ones. You haven't forgotten them at all. And you guys also collaborated, with the very lovely ladies from Anak Rimba Books, who I've spoken to before as well. And they come up with, you know, delightful books in the past. And the new one, of course, is My Midnight Flora book, which is, targeted towards children and has bats as the central characters, right? Tell me about that and that collaboration.
So we know that the younger generation are important drivers of change. So we knew we needed to target children in our outreach as well. So we approached Anak Rimba, who's done a fantastic job of writing children's books featuring Malaysia's endangered wildlife and promoting conservation awareness to children. So we approached them to come up with a book for us so that we could introduce flying foxes and educate children about their ecology, their habitat, special relationship with plants and flowers, and the very important role they play in our ecosystems. And we also wanted to particularly highlight their special relationship with durian flowers and the durian pollination cycle. So the book explains this at the end too. And we also managed to rope in Atom and the Dot, a Malaysian initiative that makes science and art activity kits for children, mm-hmm. As part of the collaboration, to come up with an interactive activity kit featuring flying foxes and their role in durian pollination as well.
Okay, excellent. And those books are out already, right? And the bundle and everything, you know, everybody can get their hands on it, right?
Yes, yes, they are. They can get it from the Food Bat fundraiser shop. But they can also get it directly from anakrimba.com, I guess. Yeah.
Okay, the Anakrimba website. But I mean, speaking of that fundraiser, I hear you guys are having a Fruit Bat fundraiser, right? Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Okay. So the Fruit Bat fundraiser, which we launched on International Bat Night on 28th of August, aims to highlight fruit bats and make them more visible in the public eye so that more people are aware of how, you know, really how wonderful and harmless and helpful they really are and just how much we actually rely on them. And the research we are conducting aims to collect more evidence of this. And so the funds will help us achieve that. But the big picture goal really is to raise awareness and change the public misconception of bats, especially after all the negative backlash bats have, you know, unfairly gotten after the pandemic. They've been wrongly and unfairly villainized for disease outbreaks. Some consider them as pests for destroying fruit crops. A large majority of people don't even know what they do or that they even exist. Basically, fruit bats don't get enough love and recognition. So we wanted to shine the spotlight on them, change their narrative, and help them get the positive attention they deserve. So the fundraiser, basically, it's a two-pronged approach. First, we wanted to raise awareness and change the negative perception of bats, because besides the fact that their numbers are dwindling, they're also not often seen simply because they're nocturnal or, you know, active at night.
Yeah.
When they are depicted in popular culture, for example, they're always portrayed as these scary creatures of the night with fangs and are, you know, associated with Halloween and vampires. And people tend to fear what they don't know or don't understand. So to normalize bat imagery or depiction of bats, we decided to collaborate or commission artists to come up with, you know, beautiful artworks and merchandise featuring fruit bats doing what they do best in their natural element. And then getting as many of them out there to the public as possible so that images or depictions of bats can be normalized and, you know, hopefully be seen as something endearing rather than scary. And second is so that the funds raised will help us continue our work and conduct the necessary research for gathering the evidence we need to further prove the crucial role they play for our ecosystems and when why fruit bat conservation is so important. So by using science and art, we wanted to invite people to see bats in a different light and to realize that nighttime has a beautiful and enchanting side as well.
Couldn't have put it better. And, you know, speaking of all that funds that you will be, that's, you know, hopefully will raise even more after this, what is all of that going to be channeled towards?
Well, Juliet, all the funds will actually be channeled directly towards the research that we actually have to continue for a little bit longer next year. So we were originally supposed to be wrapping up our project already by the end of this year, mm-hmm. but then we got really badly impacted by COVID. You know, our field work was really restricted. Our data collection was restricted. And we realized that actually we need to extend our research for just one more durian season next year. You know, we need to collect a little bit more data.
Sure.
And then by doing that, that would also help us to continue pursuing some of the work we've been doing that focuses specifically on protection of flying foxes, especially in a few of our key study sites. So essentially, you know, these funds will help us to keep going for just a little bit longer. And then once we're done with our work, if there are any funds left over, we will actually then channel those directly to another project under RIMBA. It's called Kenye for Life. Kenye for Life is a project that focuses on conserving the landscape of Kenye in Terengganu.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been working with them for flying fox conservation in Terengganu. So once our project wraps up, they'll actually be taking on more of our flying fox protection work there. Okay. And so in that way, the funds that we get will actually continue to help protect flying foxes.
Okay, all right. So there is definitely continuity. And there's definitely plans in the pipeline as well, right? So yeah.
Yes, definitely. Kenya for Life will continue working in Terengganu long after we've wrapped up our work in Project Tropus. So our work doesn't end with us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, that is the hope as well, isn't it? That it just, you know, sparks even more research and work into these areas. Yeah,
exactly. Yes.
Okay. All right. And I know that you've also collaborated with several local and international artists for this fundraiser, right? Maybe you can just share who some of them are, you know, what sort of pieces was created specifically for this. Tell me a little bit about that.
Okay, so we knew we needed to tackle the different audience segments and age groups. So we approached different kinds of artists to come up with different kinds of artwork and merchandise. So one of them is this US-based artist, illustrator, known as Jungle Vibes Trading, or at least what his moniker is online. His real name is Eric Koppinger. He helped us design the entire branding for the Food Bed fundraiser. He did all the lovely illustrations that you can see on the Food Bed fundraiser website. And we also used his artwork to come up with the Nighttime Gardeners Bundle, which consists of an enamel mug. And then he made this hand-knitted bat ornament. We have bat pins, enamel pins. And we've got a postcard. I think that's pretty much it.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's quite a lot then, there. Yeah.
Yeah. For his bundle. And then we worked with a local artist, named Kirin Sharom, also known as Bunga dan Bintang. And we did a whimsical night bundle, which consists of, like a poster illustration. And then we've got postcard, we've got stickers. We got her to make, fabric face mask,
okay,
as well, and a washi tape. And then, so we have the Midnight Flora bundle. You know, it's also part of the Food Bag fundraiser, which consists of the book and the activity kit. And we actually had plushies made out of the characters of the book, which is, you know, Flora and her mama. And we also commissioned a US-based artist named Erica Williams to come up with the Beauty in the Darkness bundles, which consists of an art print poster of her illustration, a t-shirt, a tote bag.
And it's some beautiful images. My goodness me, I still haven't managed to choose one yet. You know, I'm like, I love them all, and it's really it's a tough decision, guys. But I must say, I must compliment you guys. It's such beautiful merchandise, you know. I mean, and so well made, and just really lovely images, really. And yeah, like I said, some of my colleagues actually have bought them. You know, they were parading around in the t-shirt, very pleased with themselves, I must say.
Wonderful!
Thank you.
It's been ongoing for a while. As I said, you know, some of my colleagues even have already bought some of the merchandise. But how much have you raised so far? And, you know, how much, I guess, you know, are you hoping to achieve? And how can people support and get involved?
Much to our surprise, we actually managed to hit our target of RM 30,000 in less than a month after we launched.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's awesome. And we are now at a little over 36,000 ringgit. But, you know, even if people can't contribute financially, because it's really not just about, you know, the funds, more than anything else, we want people to be advocates for bats, spread the good word about bats now that, you know more about them, have conversations about them. If you meet someone who doesn't know, you know, and yeah, just celebrate fruit bats, spread awareness about all the different and unique fruit bat species, what they do for the environment, and for us, debunk negative myths and misconceptions, because there's a lot of them, and overall help to save their populations and habitats in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm. And start them young, right? Get the kids as well. And I know that you are having some of those activities, right, in line with Bat Week, and this happening over social media. We're targeting the young ones here. What's in store?
Okay, so last year and earlier this year, we've shared our findings on the regional cultural symbolism of bats. So for this year's Bat Week, we wanted to focus on and share Malaysia's own cultural heritage involving bats, like bat motifs that we've spotted on ceramics, buildings, furnitures, embroidery, etc. And so we'll be doing a Spot the Kelawar Challenge where we invite people to either share our findings that we'll be posting or their own findings or sightings of bat motifs in arts and crafts or traditional architecture, which is kind of like a photo scavenger hunt.
Nice.
And we'll pick a few lucky winners to win some bat merch from the Fruit Bat Shop. But if anybody is able to share their own bat motif findings, they'll also get a bonus mystery gift.
Ooh.
Yeah. So we basically we want people to rediscover the local cultural symbolism of bats, start conversations and ask questions and begin to notice and start paying more attention to either, real actual bats, if they can, or, depictions of bats and bat motifs in our traditional arts and crafts. And hopefully this way start to appreciate and love Malaysia's very own bats even more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if I can just share this quick story with you. Like, there was some Facebook group where a person was complaining about bats living in their some room of theirs, right? And everybody was saying, call pest control. And then I don't know where these bunch of other people came saying, no, you must protect them. You must conserve them. This is what you should do. And I'm very sure I saw your organization being mentioned there as well. So it's working, guys. It's working. People are having those conversations. It's not immediately, let's exterminate them. It's like, how can we protect them? They are vital to our survival. So that's something there. I hope that makes you guys feel a bit happy.
Oh, wow. That's amazing, yes. Juliet. Thank you for that.
I will try and find that link and share it with you guys if I can locate it. I guess, before I let you ladies go, any last messages you'd like to share with us, with regard to Bat Week, why they're so awesome, why people shouldn't fear them? Any last message you'd like to share?
Yeah, I guess the main message we want to send to people, especially for Bat Week, is that bats are not scary. Bats are not dangerous. Bats are actually amazing, incredible, important animals, and we need them in our lives. And so, please join us in our cause and become fruit bat advocates. Consider getting, Project Tropus bat swag from our fruit bat shop. All this beautiful images and artwork that we have of bats, consider getting these items and using them or wearing them or displaying them. Or if you don't need the stuff yourself, consider getting some of these to give to friends and family, because this is what, we really need people to do. We need to get these amazing images of bats out there into the public domain where more people can see these images easily, because by doing that, that's how we can really start trying to flip the narrative about bats, to actually change perceptions from negative to positive. Maybe even some of these items could help, kickstart interesting and enlightening conversations about bats.
Yeah.
And so that's what we really want to achieve. We really need people to start doing that. These actions of like getting this bat merchandise, using it, wearing it, it actually contributes directly towards helping us raise awareness, because we're just a small team. We have very limited resources, so we definitely cannot do this all on our own. So the only way that we can make a wider impact is if all of you out there actually help, take on this cause for yourselves and help us really spread these positive messages and images about bats in Malaysia.
Okay. All right. And of course, if they'd like to do that, they just need to head to the RIMBA website, rimba.ngo/project-tropus. But also, you guys are very active on social media. I follow you on Twitter. And so many lovely updates there. Where else can we follow you guys on social media?
Well, we have the link to the fruit bat shop, don't we, Hannah? Which is different.
Yes. And that's, you can check out the fruit bat fundraiser at thefruitbatfundraiser.com, and also the Fruit Bat Shop, which is thefruitbatfundraiser.com/shop.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. But I'm sure I do know that if we head to, let's say, your Facebook page or your Instagram page or your Twitter page, we can find the links there as well, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. All right. Well, thank you so much, all three of you, for joining me today. I've been speaking to Dr. Shima Abdul Aziz. She's a principal investigator for Project Europa. She's also the co-founder and president of RIMBA. Hana Abdul Aziz, who's the communications manager for Project Europas. And Mary Ruth Lau, who's the senior conservation scientist with Project Europas. And we were talking about, of course, our lovely bats and, you know, specifically our the ones that we can find locally here. Again, just head to rimba.ngo for more information or follow them on social media. And if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can always download the podcasts at bfm.my/earth, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.